This is the Agile Thoughts Podcast, and I'm Lance Kahn. This is the first episode and only episode. This is a mega episode, so be prepared. Maybe you want to go get a drink and something to a snack to eat, because this episode's going to be a long one. Although I usually like to split these shows into multiple episodes, the information content here is pretty dense, and so it wasn't conducive to being episodic. If you haven't looked at the show notes yet, take a look, because within you will see a link to a PowerPoint slide used during this presentation. The presentation is to a meetup in Seattle called Seattle Less, L-E-S-S, which is short for Large Scale Scrum. So if you care to, you can follow along with the slide deck. Are you interested in learning how large organizations transform to Agile? Perhaps you're a Agile coach or some interested party who is undergoing a transformation. James Carpenter is a certified less friendly practitioner and less friendly trainer. And he's an executive Agile coach, which means he talks to the big people in the company and helps them with their transformation. Let's hear James' story on how he is part of a less transformation at a large server hardware company.
And then the other thing worth announcing is I've kind of been looking around for the unloved, like where in the globe there happen to be people that don't have training that would like it in person, right? A CLP in person. And so if I go to, you know, I haven't been focusing on Seattle because MJ's there. The same with Gene's in New York and Minneapolis.
You can focus on Seattle. I'm not doing anything. I don't think the market's there. So, but if you can find a market.
Okay. And mostly what I'm doing is I'm not doing it on spec. I'm just doing on, hey, if I can find a cluster and the cluster wants it.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do it. But I'm reluctant to do it unless there's I can get a group together that wants it. But okay. But if I'm not stepping on your toes, so that's it.
Damn.
Okay. So case study. Was working at the case study revolves around a large let's say server infrastructure on a forklift type platform. A lot of companies make this kind of thing. Well, a handful do. And so a bunch of blades, switch infrastructure on the top, bunch of blades in a rack. Stuff on top of this that is sort of an orchestration layer and a single pane of glass to be able to see the thing as a whole. And then of course, it connects to storage as well, and you slide in your drives or you slide in the competitor's drives and whatnot. If we look at this from a architectural perspective, from, let's say, an Agile adoption software engineering flavor perspective, what's interesting, so here you have the blades, right? And you have, you know, whatever the newest Intel chipset is that you're trying to support on the new blade design before Intel goes to publicly release the chipset, right? You get them early. That's what's down here. Then these are plugged into a chassis, and there's a chassis controller that talks to that from the back plane. And then that talks up to what is basically middleware, a bunch of C++ code, but it could be Java code. It could be most any high-level thing running on a network device. But that network hardware is really just a standard server box. It's stable hardware. So down here, we're in the primordial ooze. We don't even have an operating system when we're doing custom BIOS. We're not that far up this, you know, it's not booted that far up yet. They're just happy that they're not writing an assembly code. The BIOS is coming from AMI in this case. So when you do a custom BIOS, just like if you were going to, like, if you're going to make a Unix distribution of your own, there is no way you would write your run from scratch, right? You would start with all the GNU tool chain. You would start with, you know, some standard free BSD or Linux distro, and then you would make your changes on top of that you needed to customize for your context. This is the same situation. Is there are, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands or millions of lines of BIOS-related code that they're getting in a dump truck from AMI, and then they're making tiny little changes inside of that. Because that chipset is new, AMI is changing their code at the same time to support the new hardware. So the dump truck comes and dumps a new load every 2 or 3 weeks. And of course, they're not running So sometimes there's problems in their firmware. Sometimes the problem is in the actual hardware. So Intel shipped you a bad chip, right? Sometimes it's the firmware that this MCS division...
Clarifying question. So yes. Bad chip means that the design, badly designed chip, or you mean that a particular one is as defective as a unit?
Maybe it came off the fab wrong. Maybe the design is wrong. I mean, it could run the gamut. When they're debugging problems, they sometimes pick up a hairdryer and like hit it with heat and see if there's
and see if it changes the behavior.
Yeah. So, and that's the nature. This is very much low level embedded hardware, very close to the metal, frequently hands on the metal. Whereas up here, they think, oh, we're doing firmware. But the truth is, it's just a big funky, you know, middleware system. But instead of doing banking software, it's managing a big network infrastructure, a big network hardware infrastructure. But it is just run-of-the-mill, C++, all of the tool chains you would ever want are there, and the hardware that you're running on is stable. And that's the level of stability as you work your way down towards the Intel chipset changes radically. Do we have Easy on? Oh, he's here. Mitya, you want to talk? You want to say hi?
Hi, everyone. Sorry I'm late. Thanks for letting me join and share the stage with James. So far, so good, James. All accurate.
Oh, it's good. It's good because he's far more of an expert than I am on this. So there's this spectrum of complexity as you go up and down. And initially, Mitya, you want to set up anything else you want to add?
Not yet. I just joined
a few minutes
ago. But yeah, not
So there's the context. When I first came in, I had an initial VP who I sat down with. A general manager, and you'll see that if you did your pre-reading or your skimming. When I walked in the door, I had a general manager of these several thousand people division that was extremely supportive. And in the very first meeting we ever had, where I was just kind of quietly listening and trying to get to know the guy. He said, James, the important part here is not what you can do for me. The question is, how can I help you? And you tell me what you need, and I'll make it happen, is more or less what he said. Extremely supportive. He's an engineer's engineer. He might have been an IIT grad, lots of patents on the wall. Even if he didn't know how to fix the problem, he understood the spirit of the problem. The engineer in him was there. And the initial charter that I was given was go take a look around and look at the various agile efforts that are going on and see what can be improved. And when I did that, I came to realize that everything that was being called agile, was anything but. And so I said, well, they've never seen what good looks like. So for better or for worse, I stood up a bubble, right? I stood up, well, let's build one little Scrum team. Let's find a slice of the product that will support that.
This the SVP then, was he already, I'm guessing he didn't start out looking for less, because I haven't had that experience. He started out looking for improvement or Scrum or something like that, and then you had to lead him towards some of the ideas of the feature team.
In fact, I had not even read the Less books at the time I did this.
Ah.
So this is a less like adoption by someone who never actually read the Less books. And it just so turns out that my innate, what was very natural to me, aligns almost perfectly with Less. And to be fair, I think the third book was only out like a year before before this. But I didn't have awareness, to be honest. I think I may have had some awareness of Nexus. So we looked for a slice that would be kind of isolated. There was a diagnostics component that would require touching a bunch of different pieces.
James, actually, maybe a follow-up question to MJ, although I'm not here to ask questions, but it seems like a follow-up question. Did the GM come with, hey, I want agile adoption, or he came with, hey, I have problems?
Hey, I have problems, and I heard that you helped another division, and I heard good things. It's really kind of that simple. And I hear you're an agile coach guy. And so I started, flying back and forth. It was really that simple. Is that help? That answer the question?
Yeah.
That's how I got my main client for doing Less in the past also. I'd done something else for another company where he had been a VP there. And
oh, it's just, okay, yeah.
Yeah, prior experience. So it's not coming through typical traditional marketing channels. for me, it's coming through.
Oh, yes, yeah. And that was how I got this one. I was very fortunate that way. Ah. So we were looking for something that one could build at least some modicum of a proper feature team that touched everything and then demonstrate that it worked. And it turned out that they were having nightmares in the field with there'd be this, you know, multi-million dollar hardware on premise at some client site. And there would be, you know, a bug in the system, in the hardware. There'd be perceived to be maybe there's a memory failure, maybe there's a CPU failure, maybe there's, you know, network card failure. And they would have fits put in, it'd be a ghost in the machine, and they'd have fits putting their finger on it. And, you know, sometimes they'd eventually find it and replace the relevant hardware. But it wasn't uncommon that they do multiple replacements of the same hardware. And after they did that two or three times, they'd just say, hey, we're just going to ship you another multi-million dollar unit. And then they'd finally get the old unit back. They'd put it on a bench and they'd go, oh, well, we can't reproduce the problem. And this had been going on for years. And the because this is the big monster that it is, this company, and they have a tech support division that is just as capable as the engineers that build these systems. They're six-figure salary system engineers, sysadmin types, network admin, system admin types. When they want to do something at the Olympics, you know, they send these guys and they go stand up, you know, all the infrastructure at the Olympics, right? They had lots and lots of analytics of failure to identify a problem in this, you know, this memory problem, this memory chip problem. That's costing us so many $1 million per month for not having it fixed. Failure to be able to identify problems with CPUs, so much money. So they know what percentage of problems they're having in the field that are isolated down to certain things. They know which machines of, I don't know how many machines are in the field, thousands. Mitra, you have a better idea than I do. You have a bunch of customers, but not like, it's not like cell phones.
Yeah, I mean, more orders than magnitude than thousands.
Tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands?
Hundreds of thousands, yeah.
Okay. So hundreds of thousands of these in the field, and they know which ones are coming back and hitting the bench, and they can't reproduce it. Even after the customer had this horrible experience of, you know, an outage, and maybe their trading systems aren't working for a week, and that makes them upset, as you might could imagine, especially when they pay for the big name. So we were able to find a slice to go after, and this happened to cut through the whole system. It had a business driver for it, which was actually unrelated to the death march these guys were on to build the next generation of blades. That's an interesting dynamic that comes up later. So we pulled together a team that could do that. Somewhere in here, we have the happy little team. Here we have the happy little team, right? And sure enough, you know, they start, I train them up. We do proper definitions of done. They commit to quality. They're doing unit testing by the first. They're doing a test first development for their Python code by their first sprint. By the second or third sprint, we've fixed the C++. We've put in the infrastructure we need to do C++. Because remember, a lot of this is deployed to target. So a lot of the tools are kind of primordial in some cases.
Deployed to target.
So a lot of this is, you know, firmware development where you write it on one machine and then you have to flash the target and then you remotely debug the target. Not unlike cell phone development in that regard, right? And sometimes the tool chains are old and clunky. And as we get down to the BIOS code, they're super old and clunky. But this is, they're like 1980s old and clunky, and there's only a few thousand people in the world that work on it. So why would we ever make the tool chain better? So they don't, because they don't have to. And it's like, you know, this chipset boots the way it does, and the protocol is the way it is, because that's the way they did it in like 1982 or whenever. Or whenever. Mitra, you know whatever the date was, right, that they did all these x86 specs, right?
Right, yeah. And a lot of it is, maybe no longer in assembly code, but still same, you know, same, oftentimes, same people that did it, not so far as 80s maybe, but, you know, 90s, mid-90s for sure.
Ooh, because you're UEFI now, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so sure enough, this team starts to knock it out of the park. It's set up to succeed, at least at the macro level. At the micro level, it's set up to succeed. I did not fix the organizational chart problems so that in the long term, it wasn't sufficiently protected. And, you know, that if you read the case study in detail, that's talked about. But the more interesting thing is, so after having, you know, starting to get this team up, I start to have conversations with Mitya, and we come to realize that the sensible thing to do would be create a set of feature teams, create a requirement, what would be a requirements area in less, that is working soup to nuts all the way through the GUI aspects, all the way through the chassis controller, all the way down into the BIOS code, full slice, right? Not unlike what that diagnostics team that really was a feature team did. But we have a VP of software for all things that are software, which is basically that stuff that's higher level middleware code, who's really sort of passively aggressively against this idea. And on the flip side, we have Mitya down here, who is on the hardware side. That's really a whole bunch of software itself. And he has a VP that he's worked with a long time who has great trust in him and says, hey, if you're convinced, go do it. And we have a VP on the QA side, or the QC technically, who is very supportive of this idea. And we're able to have some testers that are assigned to the team, are trained with the team, and from day-to-day purposes are treated no different than any other team member. They are just, and they're sometimes doing development, and the developers are sometimes doing testing, right? I mean, so it's a, they're cross-training each other like crazy. And so what we built,
I like these, I'll interrupt you for a second. I like these little icons you have, the three active support versus versus whatever, and the stop, for at least for my experience. Oh, we got a fourth one for the visibly actively supporting but can't trust them.
The red guy would never come out in front of the bus and say no. Okay. It was very passive aggressive.
Well, for me, there was one guy in particular. Maybe I'd use a snake or something for this, because he was really like the bad. Most vocal in front of people, most vocally supportive. But then you hear about all these awful things he's done.
Yeah, didn't quite get that, but close.
I was.
That's interesting.
This was close to that. You had that stop sign, right?
Yeah.
I kind of like, at least when I'm in doing the training and the consulting, I like the active resistance because there's something to engage with. And
yeah,
a lot of times, some of those people are still my friends, you know, once you eventually win them over. But they do, and they should challenge you because you're telling them, you know, extravagant claims, you know, require extraordinary proof, right? So they should be challenging us.
You don't have to be, you don't have to agree with me to be an honorable, nice person.
Yeah. So those aren't the ones that scare me. It's the ones that are visibly supportive or sort of passive anyway, but turn out not to be. Yeah.
So what we ended up doing was building what was effectively an extended component team. We stood up what were as feature team-esque as we could get within the context of BIOS. Talk a bit here because we're not doing as good as we did last night. Different audience, but we have, I think, more technical audience. I think we're getting... We're going to get better questions.
I like this, interactive discussion as well. Set up the... So you described the technical side of the product.
So how did... I guess let's give a story of how did I get you brainwashed?
Yes, brainwashed, right. Uh-huh. Mm. Yes. I will start with a strong statement that I knew... that I shouldn't believe any of this. I knew none of this works and all of this is kind of, not for firmware, not for firmware. Firmware, we don't do Agile. Firmware, we don't do Scrum. And looking back, it was kind of silly of me, but I don't think that in my defense, I don't think it's a unique position. I think a lot of people either know by that experience or know by talking to somebody that no, we don't, this component we can do Agile, this component we can't, and firmware we can't. And we can't. And, I saw James around and, we had a couple of lunches together and then he would stop by my office and draw a lot of Agile lingo on a whiteboard. And I'm kind of a patient person, so I let him. And then we had one meeting where, a meeting where we went into a conference room with a bigger whiteboard, and it was wasn't scheduled for a long time, but it ended up being about two and a half hours. And the more James was going into the benefits, the framework, the things that change with the framework, or things that have to change so that the framework is successful, the more I realize that, one, these are things that I want to change and are difficult to change without proper framework, and two, these are things that I should want to change and I haven't thought about them. You know, to give you an example, like think simple things that are not written down in Waterfall, such as definition of done. What does it mean when we're done? Yes, you know, good teams have, and maybe James, you can scroll into
working on you.
What looks like my handwriting. And I'm not sure if that makes me less anonymous if my handwriting is there.
I'm not worried.
So, you know, there's nothing really here that good teams don't follow. But, you know, this was what we came up with James's guidance as a team. You know, this wasn't me writing down and dictating, but everybody came up with this. We argued about some things. I remember this point number 8. We argued, should we say, you know, severity 3 defects? Should we also say that we can't come out of sprint without severity 3, or can we postpone? And we decided that, you know, done means no severity 3. Because severity 3 is really a defect that should be fixed before you ship.
I think it's interesting. I didn't coerce anyone. These guys were desperate to do this. They were tired of being railroaded and doing crappy work.
Right.
They wanted to do things like, number 2 was a big deal to them, you know?
Yeah. It became a big deal for sure. You know, for example, number 4 also, there's always this challenge between, okay, ship, move on, document later, or document and ship a little bit later, but, you know, with everything completed. And you know, we decided that we needed things documented. So, you know, for example, this is an example of something that I wasn't necessarily looking for, but when, you know, James described the definition of done concept, it was very much something that I wanted to implement. And as James said, the team wanted to implement and wanted, you know, and pushed me to add things that they cared about. You know, on the other hand, more soft, squishy things, such as, you know, people stepping up and, you know, leading micro teams, scrum teams, people speaking up in the meetings, you know, the team meeting. You know, we had normal structure that teams have, a team meeting where the boss speaks mostly, and one-on-ones where people speak mostly. You know, but having a structure where people have to speak up in a team meeting, such as a sprint review, such as retrospective, you know, speak up negatively, speak up positively. That is something that I very much was interested in the framework. You know, another thing is kind of melting down the silos between development and QA. You know, the model of let's write up some code and throw it over to QA, generate some bugs, then we fix the bugs, then we have another cycle, then we have maybe another cycle, maybe quiet time, and then we ship. You know, that never really spoke to me. And again, this Scrum Agile framework really helped put it in place relatively quickly. With James's help, of course.
I think it's also interesting to speak of the fact that because BIOS itself is so complex, there were narrow silos from component ownership, even within the BIOS team.
Yes, that's correct.
It was a tremendous stretch for these guys, just to the concept of the team is accountable for doing anything that happens to be in that BIOS code.
I think if you scroll up into...
You want the
scroll up maybe down where the stickies are and
Stickyville.
I don't remember if it was clear to me that we were going to do this as part of kind of implementing the Agile framework, but when we did this, it made a lot of sense. It took a long time, took at least I would say 3 solid days for the team to sit in a big comfort, you know, break down each of their individual components into these. Originally, they were not user stories. They were more, what does it take to build a memory training component? You know, a memory component, right? A memory initialization and training memory lanes and setting different aspects of memory configuration. You know, what does that look like? How do you break it down into, I don't know, steps, features, functions? And how do you explain it to people who have, you know, good, deep technical understanding of the system, but may not know, for sure don't know, you know, each individual level, each individual component's implementation, and may not know to the level of detail how, what needs to be done in order to succeed in each component. So that
there'd only be like one person that knew out of one or two people that knew out of like 30, 40 people.
Right. Yep.
And they had, ironically, they had done this because of the model they had always done in the past was for every new chipset, they would fork the code base completely. No pluggability.
Yeah.
And they would just copy paste. They'd go find the relevant snippet in the old code and copy paste that over and then adjust it. And it's like making changes way down in the kernel it randomly and then just copy pasting them over without any sort of, you know, componentization mechanism to do it. Yeah, so they had done this activity. The people that knew one thing, they knew it really well because they'd done it like 10 times in the last 5-10 years.
For each new chipset or each new config, artwork config.
Yeah.
And each time they're coming from a slightly newer version because they're copying from a moving baseline, or are they going back to the...
Well, the dump truck may have moved things, right? Remember, AMI dumped a whole new code base, and AMI may have moved things around a little bit.
I see.
But they're also going back into the old code base and stealing stuff, right? And copy pasting it into the new.
Okay. And being archaeologists.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and oftentimes the new, you know, if you don't write the code in modular way, and I'm trying not to be very generic here, but you know, if the code is not written in modular way, if it's you know, you take a third and node, you know, you insert your customizations throughout the code so that the code flows and works customized to your features, then the moment the third party delivers new code, you have to extract what you have done and then insert it back into potentially completely new code. And some of it is from AMI, some of it could be from CPU vendors. And, you know, everybody likes to rewrite.
And merging. Lots of merging.
And they're not giving you binaries, you know, they're giving you the source code, right?
Lots of merging, yes. Lots of merging. You know, I wish it was just merging. I mean, it was... I don't think it was something that source control was able to take care of. But you're right, Lanzo, you're right. Lots of merging, very much manual. Yeah, and that's
every few weeks, right? Every week or two, they'd do a new dump.
Not you know, every week it was merging. Every week it was merging, but every year it was archaeology, right? And you know, putting the bones together so that, you know, it looks like a thing that you want to dig up archaeologically. And this is something that the team wanted. Very much. The team wanted to not do this. You know, it was something that everybody completely hated doing naturally, right? You spin your wheels, and at the end, you haven't learned anything new. The best case scenario is you're in exactly the same place where you were a year ago, and you spent like 4 months doing it. Maybe 2 months, and maybe 18 months ago. You know, the cycles of this AMI BIOS is about 18 months. And it would take about 2 months to dig things up and place them in the new code base.
In some ways, you're implementing the same interface contracts again. The same interface contracts that you built before and before, you know, you're connecting to all the rest of the infrastructure and it has to look the same as the old thing, right? New blade, same as the old blade, is 98% of the work, right? As far as the system goes, oh, it's a new blade. Oh, there's 2% that we changed, but that we added some new, you know, attribute or whatever. But mostly, the lights come up and beep and let you install an OS, right? So we're at an interesting point for a segue on that relates to what Minty is talking about. So we had, because we played an interesting dirty trick. Notice that here we have Minty in the States. That includes Portland and the West Coast. Sorry, Seattle, Portland. That doesn't count as the West Coast. But down Silicon Valley. Yeah, so, you know, Silicon Valley as well as Portland area. And that's all under Minty. Mitya. So whatever the heck Mitya wants to do, he's got blessing to do it. But over in India, although we've got some people down lower that are like first level management that really want the change, they have a director that's very much old school thinking.
Oh, right there, yeah.
So Here's the dirty trick. The dirty trick is that I need the architecture diagram, if you want to call it that. The dirty trick is that, you know, these previous generations that were put in production, they have bugs because they're built in waterfall and they have all kinds of bugs, not to mention just, you know, there will be security flaws that come up and they have to get fixed. But they have, you know, they ship with lots of bugs for the last iteration, for the last release or two, and they only release every 6 months, every year, anytime there's a new major chipset. So we'll just keep India busy. And we don't care that they're India. We care that the people that are under this director that doesn't want the thing, right? The unenlightened world. And we'll let them carry on. And we will create the new branch for the new code, because that's what we've always done. It's not good, but that is what it is. And then we will build this new world. We will build this new, I hesitate to call it a parallel organization because that's not fair. It wasn't, but a mini bubble. You know, it doesn't have enough stuff fixed high enough up that I would consider it a parallel org. But in this bubble, we will build this new world. And then, and so that's standard. Train up the teams. It took me 2 rounds to train all the teams in San Jose. And of course, I'm doing that with Mintius side by side with me. So we did like 30 people, like, I think it was only 2 days. So like Monday, Tuesday, and then Thursday, Friday, I did the other group. And then I flew to Portland and I trained the other guys in Portland. So 2 weeks later, we're ready to launch and we do, you know, initial backlog refinement. We basically do the initial standing up of the teams, right? That included flushing out the definition of done, flushing out the having people decide what teams they wanted to be on. Except in the case of Portland, it was kind of self-explanatory because we asked, you know, we want you to be co-located. And so, but each team, you know, they've decided what teams they wanted to be on. We did definition of done. We figured out what our cadence was going to be and all the usual inception type activities. And we launched them. But then, and because we had made sure that we had both in Portland as well as in San Francisco area, we had the testers who were from that friendly VP on the QA side. We had those testers, you know, mingled throughout the teams as well. So every team had that test knowledge. And they were really the only people that had the end-to-end testing knowledge because people had lived in these little narrow silos. So they didn't understand the nitty-gritty details, but they had the holistic knowledge that Mintia's people did not have, and vice versa. It was a very interesting how siloed the knowledge was, and you needed that combination to have what you needed. And then we started with 3 teams, and they're doing the new stuff where we've used the version, the hardware generation. We've used the hardware generation as a boundary, as a like a requirements area boundary, if you want to use it in less words. And we're leaving India the hell alone. These people are still working on, still reporting to Mintia, but they're still cleaning up stuff in the older code base. We're getting this group up and going. And then as they roll off of fixing bugs in previous generation hardware that should have never been out there anyway, but it was, that we roll them into this structure. And so this gives us, say, 9 months of runway where we're setting up the crisis, because when India finally onboards, there's going to be friction. And there was. But any questions here?
What did you mean by lack of requirements boundaries? I mean,
requirement, what I said is it would align with a requirements area in less parlance, right? Well, or you could, I would say that we defined our product boundary, but that's wrong because the real product boundary is this whole damn thing. If you ask a customer, what is the product? They will tell you it's this thing that comes on a forklift, right? Mm-hmm. And because this is a product company, this is not an internal product. This is an external product that's put on a shelf and you can go buy it, pay your millions of dollars, and you can have a unit. This is the product. That's clear.
Yeah.
What we were really doing is we were defining, and if we look at the diagnostics, what we're doing is we're defining what is like an extended component boundary, that everything you read in the less books about product boundary, it's kind of true here, except, you know, it's not the real product. The real product, this is just an extended component. Go ahead.
I was just thinking about that. There isn't a black and white for me, like the product definition.
So we're talking about feature areas. And so you have a big piece of hardware. I mean, you have the hardware integrated product, the software that makes it go. And then, so the sense I get, and it's okay, I'm just asking, it sounds like James, the product definition, like, did you come into this transformation knowing a product definition in advance, or did you hoping it would emerge as you did the transformation?
So what I'm saying is that when I started up with Mitya, forget about diagnostics, because that we did build we had an external facing customer that was a pretty good customer definition in terms of a customer segment. It just wasn't the customer that the rest of the division cared anything about and was being graded on. It was actually, how's the product being used in the field? Is that helpful? Versus, is it out yet? We want to put trash on the shelf and sell it, which is oddly different, right? Those should have been the same, but instead we were thinking, okay, within the realm of possibility of what we can go after, what is the biggest boundary we can get away with and build as cross-functional and as cross-component a team as possible?
All right.
And the best we could do was to build what was effectively an extended component boundary. I'm sorry, an extended component team in which the team was an extended component team.
Yeah.
And that was true from day one.
A bigger component. The boundaries grew to a larger component. You're signaling that they're still a component team, but they're more cross-functional than they were before.
But even from day one, even here with the light blue baby, icky baby blue, they only made changes to their own code, but they validated all the way up the food chain.
Oh, okay.
All the way up the stack. They had the testers from the QA with that happy VP, tester VP who was supportive of us.
Oh, boy.
And we validated all the way up, which is exactly what, if you look up, that is an extended component team by definition. And then we started to slowly grow the thing. And so we go over to these guys. So communication channels go through here, because this is the chip that's always on, that's running it's got a stripped down version of Linux on a really low power chip with and it's on all the time. So when you tell the blade to reboot, this is the thing that's always on that reboots everything else that's here, right? This is what flips the power for the rest of the blade, but this guy never goes off, right? He's just there to kick this guy in the ass. But all communication channel goes through it. So if we were having to do some work that the BIOS needed to communicate up to here, and it had to communicate through the node controller, and then it had to make some go through the chassis, the information had to go through up to here and make some changes here. Well, we'd go to these guys and we'd say, we've been working with you. We had a real good relationship in this case because we had a director involved that was friendly, was related to the director that was also involved in the diagnostics effort. And we said, next time there's a simple problem that's not a big one, it's not a big change, are you okay if we make the change and then have you peer review it, right? And, they're under the gun for delivering all kinds of other shit. And they're like, yeah, you want to do that for us? Yeah, you do the work and we'll look at it. And we're asking them, can you please tell us, we wanted to have a discussion with you before we do it. And like, is this an easy one? We're looking for an easy one so we get our feet wet. So help me find an easy one. And there was always stuff for us to do. And so eventually there'd be something easy to come up. And the intention, and we got the buy-in, but we never quite made it because of some massive layoffs, which is we didn't get to. Yeah, they went from 44,000 to 2,000. At the end. So there's a whole layoffs came and the world fell apart. Craig said, when you're writing a case study, you have to be careful, because if you're not careful, all case studies basically say, and then management changed then management fucked up and it all fell apart. that was like
his quote. So it seems to be a recurring theme. I guess it's a macroeconomic problem. The fact that companies keep wanting to change their upper level management for.
So anyway, we would weasel our way into changing their code because they're busy and it would be helpful. And we also got the same kind of agreement up here. So even though up the food chain, we have we're really down here at this point. There's been a change in the VP. So 3 months into my tenure, we lost that super supportive VP, and we have someone who just kind of neutral in behavior and not that useful, not aggressive, not undoing what we're doing, but not helping us. And that was almost as bad. But anyway, so even though we have this software VP who really doesn't want this to happen, and even though, you know, down in here, even this UCSM director doesn't really want that to happen, the tech leads and everybody down in here, they're just trying to get shit done. And with the mountain of people involved, these guys don't know what's happening down here. They just care about, are my checkboxes getting checked? And so, not in a way that we were being, you know, we weren't sneaking around and not telling anyone. We weren't like, oh, we're going to lie. We were being honest. But, you know, we'd go down to some engineer down in here, down in the weeds, or really a tech lead, and they're like, hey, you want to do that change? Let us review it. That's fine. And then we wouldn't have to align our schedules as much as we constantly, the BIOS teams that were in this new structure, were constantly collaborating with the teams that were doing all the changes up here. Because in order to fully validate something, remember, this is an extended component team, it would have to get these guys to make changes up here. And they'd say, well, we're working on something else this week, right? And so these guys did that coordination and lined that up, and it was, you know, driving them nuts, is just like you think it would. So we were slowly expanding, which is exactly what you see here, where before Minty and I got involved and started doing what we did, you know, the guy who tuned memory, Tom, was just tuning memory, and he's the only one who knew that. When we launched the new teams and we had this initial BIOS component boundary, we had people in BIOS touching aspects of BIOS they had never touched before and cross-training each other like crazy, right? Both in functional skill and in component skill, everything. But they would only be validating, you know, those higher level components in the system. They were still within the box of BIOS. And then we were slowly nudging our way towards the sky, right? Because we knew that we needed to be here, right? We knew that we wanted that green to end on up to here. So we were slowly expanding into the green. But we started, when we relaunched the teams, the blue was true, which is to say, this is the code they changed. We should stop and look for questions here.
Well, by the way, just feedback. Thank you for the extended component team. I got the picture on that. I didn't know that was a less pattern. I wasn't familiar with it until you brought it up, and then I looked it up.
A third book, I don't remember where. Just look in the index for extended component team.
Yeah, I dropped a link.
MJ may remember
in the chat.
Yeah. This is something else. I think ultimately the product definition, I mean, does it include? I think it's not black and white. So every feature team in some ways is an extended component team, because we're not reinventing the transistor, right? Eventually we're going to build on something that just depends how metaphysical we get with the idea of a product, definition of product. One of the things I'm loving about the story, though, is the way that you manage to subvert explicitly, at least overtly, there are private code policies, which could have blocked you. But the fact that the engineers had empathy with each other, and human beings try and help each other out to get work done, that was enough. That what the generals said didn't matter as much as the people with their hands dirty in the work.
And I don't know if go ahead, Mitri. Go ahead.
Speaking of MJ, MJ. Speaking of general, I think James. So James, correct me if I'm wrong, but the very first interaction that people had they knew you, they've seen you, but like with Agile, with Scrum, and any concept, it was the training, right?
I don't know. You know, it's I talked to a lot of people who taught me a lot of things. You know,
probably not BIOS engineers.
Not as much. So I remember when
the reason I bring it up, though. Since it's not, it seemed to me that the training was. But MJ, you brought the general and the people. You know, James actually in the training, he said this. He set the stone that it actually had an actual general in it. There was some kind of story. I don't remember now, but it actually had a general in it and something, you know, there's always a retired admiral that talks about, you know,
Oh, you're talking about turn the ship around. You're talking about
yes.
David Marquette.
On your ship, you know, they'll...
The submarine guy.
Right. And I think it spoke to, you know, it spoke to everybody in that sense that, yeah, you ask the general for permission. Not for permission. You inform the general what's going to happen. I guess that's how they run the ships. I don't know. You inform the general what's going to happen, and then general says okay, or not okay. General may say not okay, but it's more like a you inform what you intend to do, and you inform that you've completed all the checks, and then the ship moves forward or does whatever it needs. So I think it's your mention of the general brought this concept up that James very early on brought up in training.
This one, y'all have probably seen it, right? I mean, it's not worth taking the time to hear, but I include this one along with MJ's in my course as I like it. I love the one that you used, the one that you and your wife made. Or maybe she taught you to make it. I don't know if she cross-trained you. I don't know.
This is about, which one was it?
The
3-minute one? The
why your
one?
Why your product, why you're not agile and you got too many one. Product yeah. owners. And yeah. I love that one.
Yeah, that was fun.
Is it on YouTube or is it more of a private training?
It's YouTube.
Yeah, it's out there. Yeah.
Okay. I'd love
to see how much it hits. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't know that you guys are working together on the training, but which, yeah.
His wife's a ringer. She's like,
yeah, she draws.
Okay.
So what I was going to say to kind of relate to that question of, or you made a point, Mitya, that I hadn't interacted with people. And I don't know how many of your people I interacted with before training. Maybe a lot of them. I can tell you what happened in diagnostics. So this guy here is an architect. I'm struggling with his name.
Jeff. Jeff.
Oh, is that Jeff? Jeff. Okay, Jeff. That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's weird. So Jeff's kind of a ringer on this team. You know, had an architect title, but was just a team member. And he was also the kind of guy, if like everyone was kind of deferring to him, I'd take him to the side and say, hey, notice what's happening. We kind of need you to hold back so that we can get these guys to like be engaged. And he would help make that happen, right? He would be self-aware and like encourage them not always looking to him because he's been, you know, the lead for so long, right? So wonderful guy, but he also had tremendous depth of knowledge of the entire architecture. And we were sitting around going, well, how the hell do we write automated integration tests for this diagnostic component? And so he would draw out different architectural elements and explain, you know, some of what you see here, but more on a whiteboard. I would ask questions. So we were talking to each other engineer to engineer, but we're talking to each other as, you know, I'm just a middleware guy, you know, come from a Java background. I don't know anything about this type of hardware. And he is explaining how the architecture is laid out. I'm asking questions. And then collaboratively together, I'm like suggesting, well, you know, maybe what if we did this or what if we did that? Would that let us like, you know, exercise the thing that we want to exercise? And so we kind of collaboratively figured out how we would properly test this thing. And we probably collaboratively figured out our boundary, right? And I remember when I went to work with Mitya, at some point in Mitya, we probably pulled someone in, but maybe it was Jeff. I don't know. We somehow figured out that this is a boundary we could start with.
Yes, I don't know. I think we talked to Jeff. I don't know if we pulled him in exactly. If I remember,
but it might have been one or two of your lieutenants. It might have been one or two of your really strong people
that we pulled into what? Into
just discussions. I don't know. I mean, you
could we? So because they were doing with memory component, we did loan them a few people for the memory. See, Lulu agrees.
That's right. Hey, Lebel.
Yeah. So in that, I guess in that sense, people may have had some exposure to Agile through
oh, this team
that you stood up before.
Yeah.
Stood up first. Yeah.
Okay, you were making a point then that I kind of distracted you from. What was that point? That people didn't know me until the training.
Well, oh, no. So the only point was that MJ brought up the point that you know, this came from the they're not soldiers, but not from the general, dictating. A lot of these things came from not from general dictating, but from the team wanting and telling the general, here's what we intend to do. And I just wanted to make a point that how much of that is actually true, even going to... This is the first thing that they saw was this general video that kind of really set the tone for the rest of the engagement. I think the team already had a lot of kind of safety I don't think this term existed back then, but the new term, psychological safety, they could kind of speak up of what they intend to do, but this really confirmed it. That's all I wanted to say. Maybe it was kind of a long roundabout point.
It is interesting to talk about how it fell apart. So people asked me last night, we did the same thing for New Zealand, and I was asked, where's my org chart again? I love the flavor of this one. This is so different. It's great to have a bunch of West Coast, great to have real engineers on this call. that's truth. They asked me, what would I do differently? And I would say, well, the first thing is I would not lose your key general manager SVP within the first 3 months. That's the first thing I would do differently. So
what would you do differently to prevent that, though? I mean, you got to root cause, but then how do you?
At the time, it's possible that had I had the skill set and the wisdom at the time, which I did not, to do what would have effectively have been a system modeling workshop equivalent to a CLE with an informed consent that you got everyone online, on the VP layer before you made the changes. It's possible that even once they canned the GM, who probably didn't deserve it, but that doesn't matter in the political world here, perhaps they would have still stuck with it would have been harder to reverse the decisions, right? And furthermore, perhaps had I done that and had the skill set to do it, perhaps I wouldn't have lost my GM in the first place, right?
Oh, because he would have been supported and there would have been explicit support from the higher ups.
So way up here, you have think of it almost like a portfolio management, all they care. It's like the mafia. As long as the casino keeps giving enough skim, they leave them alone until they don't. And then they send in, the enforcers. So what happened is the skim, the mountains and mountains of money became piles and piles of money. And piles is not good as mountains and mountains. And then with this old bloated approach to doing the work in the first place, these guys had built out this massive bureaucracy to do the work in the first place, right? So there's all this pyramid building of, how did they get to 4,000 engineers? It's phenomenal. Even with a complex product, you could have done it with, at least a quarter of that, if not a tenth. Right.
You defer my side. I've never seen a company that's understaffed. Haven't seen it yet.
So
we're all like Subway shops, right? Like one person at the counter baking the bread and everything.
And everybody else is hanging out back.
Oh. So what happened is this group was coughing up not enough money. And I suspect that the perception was, when I had the supportive one here, this was C-suite was neutral. When I had this guy, when I had Green Star guy, I think had the C-suite seen that the GM is really shaking stuff up, maybe they would have left him alone.
So it wasn't visible? Is that what you're getting at?
Maybe not visible enough.
Okay.
Boss would tell you, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
So what if I had tried that, maybe I just would have got kicked out within a
quicker
month.
Yeah. I feel like that's where you have to know your audience and develop a relationship with the C-suite. And that's like a full-time job by itself.
But here's the thing. This guy is responsible for freaking 4,000 people, and he is not the C-suite.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
He's still like CEO minus 3 or 4. I mean, how many down from CEO is this guy?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, three. Yeah.
But anyway, so 3 months in, this new person was sent in. Within a few weeks, this person sent the old guy home. and
sleeps with the fishes.
So he sleeps with the fishes, but you know, not till that person had been there a little while, and then just to, you know, get that person's feet wet. He got his feet wet, and then decided, well, this my peer is redundant, so let's remove him. And probably a threat to authority, threat to, you know, potential challenging.
He didn't need two GMs in there. Or did they? I don't know. I
mean, no, they didn't. Yeah. And I think this person's charter from day one was probably get that next chipset out the door. And then, based on your judgment, based on what you learn, see if you can save it. But if you can't, we won't be surprised if you do a massive layoff.
Save it means save the product or save
I don't save the people. So they don't care about the people. Okay. The C-suite doesn't give a damn about the people.
Right. So save it means what? If you can save the product.
Make the product, restore the profitability of the product.
There we are.
Or at a bare minimum, now that this cool product that a few years ago was the newest, greatest thing around and nobody else had anything that can compete with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we make tons of money because there is no competition because we're it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that everyone else catches up and it's becoming more commoditized out, well, we don't need this division that that produces what has now become a commodity product or becoming a commodity product, even though it's a gazillion-dollar commodity.
Sure.
We don't need them to be as big as they are, and we certainly can't afford it now that we're not at the pigs at the trough. With the only, you want this? Well, we're the only place you can buy it. They're not that anymore.
So is the big picture that it's a market response story? That for some reason, the product, either, so there's a couple of ways to look at this. They were selling the same volume as before, but their costs kept growing, or their market share shrank, and their costs were not shrinking with the...
I don't know. Mitya,
I think it's, you mean from business side or from the side of the...
Right, because the mountains of money, if the mountains of money were still working, you guys would still be in there doing a less. right.
Maybe. I mean, there's a lot of it, as James mentioned, is due to the churn in leadership. Now, why did the churn of leadership happen? That's a little bit hard to, maybe it's because the sponsor with the star, the GM with the star, did not bring the business unit where it needs to be. Businesses transition from, or at least this business was transitioning from grabbing market share to perhaps focusing on some specifics and not, trying different markets and different products. An engineer type of GM perhaps is not the best in that role. And so the business type of GM came in and things changed. So I'm not sure if I'm not answering your question.
No, just to bottom line, it sounds like you don't know, right? And you're speculating because nobody's probably nobody said why somebody left, right?
Right. Oh, okay. Why did that GM left?
To me, it's more about the mountains of money. That to me is even further upstream. Like, why did the mountains of money start going down? And that's either I believe that's either market share was shrinking or market share didn't change, but costs were too high to sustain the product.
Probably both, but probably mostly the first due to commoditization.
Okay.
Right. Now, to be clear, the product, the product remained and actually still remains today. It just, it took a different form. Again, one of the biggest things that changed with the new GM was reduction in products and focusing certain products on certain market segments rather than trying to grab, have a beautiful portfolio of products just like everybody else in that space. Focus on something that is really kind of extracts advantages from overall company and delivers what this business unit does best.
But and it's important. This was a very intelligent person, right? This is, and even a business type for this kind of product is pretty crazy technical, right? not the same as the previous GM, but the minimally sufficient technical depth of a business type SVP here is radically more technical than that what you'd find in another business, right? So even a less technical person is still pretty damn technical. Just not in a, oh, I realize that our problems are because we don't unit test the hell out of anything. You know, you're not going to get that. You're not going to get that insight of why these problems are happening, but you are going to get the, does this person understand the product at a high level? And the answer is, yeah, you know, could probably be a salesperson for it, that kind of thing, right?
It seems like the, how do I say this? So the less adoption was improving a lot of efficiencies, but the market was moving faster than the company could adjust. And so their reaction was to, you know, make a big change, which as you mentioned, which means reducing a lot of, I don't know what, business capabilities or something. And they got somebody in there who was maybe better at doing it or could speak to it better. Or anyways, they made the C-suite happy. And the product survived in a different form. And so my encouragement then is that, you know, James and Mitya, if you can find a way to now connect the adaptability component to less into this organization, then you may have a more powerful, even more powerful story and even more powerful change, because it isn't just about product efficiency. Now it's about adapting the market changes to avoid that big abrupt change that happened in the past.
Yeah, and that's because we were not sliced deep enough. We did not make enough structural change high enough up.
I'm not saying that you could have turned the ship around in the period of time that you're at and all that, because I have no idea.
So I find, and I think I make this analogy way down in the conclusion. You've probably heard the parable of the sower, right? And he throws the seeds on rocky soil and the plant doesn't grow, and he throws it on fertile soil that's nice and deep with good topsoil, and you get a nice crop, right? This is an interesting situation where we cast the seed where there was soil. There was soil. It wasn't on the rocks. But we didn't till the soil deeply enough. So if you got down 6 inches, a foot, foot and a half, you know, if you got down 6 inches, you hit this hard rock layer, right? And so the garden starts to grow, and you see all these amazing flowers, and all this stuff starts to come up. And then all of a sudden, it all kind of starts to wilt.
Mm-hmm.
And it wilts because you didn't till the soil deeply enough to get rid of that hard rock. In other words, we didn't. You know, here you see this systemic risk of, we have these teams, and they're still reporting up to this same reporting structure. We didn't change the formal reporting structures. That was just waiting to bite us in the ass. And sure enough, when the favorable hardware VP went away, and now we don't have the supportive GM anymore, now the sensible thing for this person to do is, well, you know, this person may not be aligned with all this good stuff that's happening down in BIOS, but they're the only VP around that understands the system as a whole. Well, I'm just going to have all the hardware people. Remember, they're really not hardware people. They're hardware firmware people. We're going to have them report to that same VP, that passive aggressive VP. I was only there once my contract came up for renewal, and there were these massive layoffs. They almost kept me in spite of that, because Minty is going around all the different places in the company and like doing power has been asked per request. He's talking about how all the improvements have happened. And you know, they almost kept me. But I have a feeling that what happened is this person who never really wanted the change now had, you know, let the contract expire and roll me off because, hey, we're laying off half the staff. How can we keep paying James, who's costing, you know, much more because he's got to fly out every week and all this, and he's a consultant, so I'm expensive, of course. And that goes away. And before long, Mitya goes and hangs out with his new, goes to the same company this guy went to. And rumor has it that it's fallen apart. Mitya, you're still there on the ground. You know more of the people than I do, but some of which have gone.
You mean this product? I mean, it's still... I don't have kind of intimate connection to it anymore, but I see, you know, posts on LinkedIn from friends that, yeah, there are some new products, and it's still going. I don't know what the structure of the organization is, or what, you know, who is still there and who is not exactly. But yeah, I almost forgot about that. You mentioned this project management VP that has the green star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's also gone now.
Right. Yeah.
And is a very good friend with the triangle lady.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, she was a big sponsor. And like James mentioned, even encouraged me to, and I did present it on some kind of like a quality development for quality or something like that forum about this. It wasn't quite a case study. It was just a few slides on how, what we did with the team and approach of development and so on. Yeah. So it was kind of this, a lot of good sides from the green stars. But yeah, things changed after.
Billy, Red Star was always respectful to me.
Yeah.
Was not a snake, right?
No.
Just passively, aggressively not helpful. And
so you're, let me see if I've got this right, James. You're saying that if you had made these structural changes under the friendly hardware VP, that they would have persisted after his resignation and the software VP wouldn't have gone in and set it up in a more...
No. That would have still happened. The only way to have really fixed it would have had the GM who was willing to build, the next natural step would be for the next hardware generation for us to build a true set of feature teams where we started to build. Would have been, we had people that were on these teams, these component teams, were now on, merged into the extended component team that is BIOS, right? And we would have continued to have focused on things that required configuration on the front end that a real customer would see. Mitya was acting as our sort of temporary product owner or fake product owner. We would have transitioned to one of the people that were in product management as what would effectively have been an area product owner. And I had relationships with them. I was working with the product management group, especially for the diagnostic stuff. I had built some of those relationships, even though they were in a different building. But the natural thing would have been to have continued to have grown this. But as that had grown, what would have happened is, not that different than what would have happened with India, is it would have threatened the hell out of this guy, because now we're stealing people from his fiefdom and pulling them into a parallel organization that's truly more empowered. And a supportive GM would have had to have either helped this person come into alignment and change his or her behavior, or let that person go. And I think that's what would have eventually happened had I not lost my Green Star GM.
How hard, I was at a client for quite a while, and not exactly the same story, but high level VP and lieutenant moved to different new areas, because at this company, about every 5 years, it's like musical chairs, a bunch of people move and shift around. People left behind are the ones who were probably just accommodating, but weren't so keen on the work that was in place. Then at that point got control, and they worked very hard to put a stop to everything that has been going on for the last three or four years. And the takeaways that we had was that we just had to get better at adapting to when the new cohort of management comes in, to get on their radar and convert them over or change their minds or go even higher. I don't know how realistic it was, because the picture that was painted for me is that most of the cohort of managers were accommodating but against, if you know what I mean, the change to start with. So I'm not sure if we're going to convert them from skeptics into supporters. But wow, yeah, that's kind of like, well, that's what I feel like the only play was, is either you got to get the new GM or even up a level higher to support you, so that when that change does occur, you can get some face time with the new person, and now you do have to rebuild some things, and but then you have a chance to help them respond to change rather than I mean, because that
the new person had next to zero time for me, the complete opposite.
Well, and he honestly, with a new job, I can understand that, right? That when you take a new job, they're like thinking about, okay, I'm experienced at doing things this way, and I'm going to keep doing things in this way in this environment. And if this way was really different than what you're doing, it's like, I feel like even getting on the calendar would require sort of a, I don't know how you say this. He had to really quickly understand the value that you could provide that would, and how it would help him or her or whoever it was, rather than otherwise they'll just say, oh, I don't have time.
Well, another interesting facet is this person had a sidekick that was a marketing sidekick who was constantly putting out articles about agility.
Okay.
That's, yeah.
So if that person, if the sidekick and the boss were aligned, then I think you must have been ships passing in the dark, just didn't get a chance to communicate or signal or something.
No. The door was basically closed. This person was there, very tight information control. And I'm pretty sure the intention all along was, you know, I don't want to get to know these people too much because I'm eventually, it's going to get bloody here.
Right? Okay.
But it can't get bloody until that chipset comes out. Because if you don't release when Intel releases, you lose tons of marketing opportunity and tons of money. Any other interesting questions here?
I say you go for chapter two. You got to go back in there and talk to him about how you can avoid that.
Okay.
I would be okay going. Let's work on the next case study for a while.
So I'd be okay going back in. I don't know that I'm okay with, another 2 years of case study editing. I think MJ can relate to that.
No, I don't want to do that again. I loved the story. This was like a page turner from a agile coach perspective anyway, or whatever I am.
yeah, what the hell are we?
A guy who wears nice shirts.
That's pretty much it. I for myself, I've got to take off. Thank you, James, for the case study. It's great reading. Mitya for supporting. Lance, thanks for setting us up. So I will see y'all later and enjoy the rest of your time together.
Thank you, Michael.
Appreciate it.
I have a feeling everybody's probably there. I mean, we're kind of, I don't have a lot more to say other than fill out my damn survey so I know where to go help people. Help me find the unloved.
Yes.
So I can run a course, and I need enough people. I need if I have free space, I need like half a dozen to break even. If we have to go to a hotel convention center type thing, then I need about a dozen to break even. But if we can get to break even, so I know I'm not going to be in the hole, right? Mm-hmm. Then I'll run it, and then hopefully people will come in from just being listed online and, just being listed on list.works. I'll get some people, right? But I just don't want to be in the hole when I go.
If you're listening to the show with a podcast player, check out the show notes. The show notes show right up inside your app, so you can tap on links conveniently. And there you will find James Carpenter has some forms where you can request a less course in your area, and he has it in English and in Spanish. You can also find other links like how to contact James and also the video format of this show.